This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Bradley Chambers, and I'll be your host today. Fraser is out traveling this week, so we have a special guest. But before we get started, I want to thank our sponsor for the night. It's Jamp Software, and we'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. So today I have a first-time guest. It's Mark Torrio, and he sent me a direct message a few weeks on Twitter and said, "Hey, I did a technology refresh based on the principles that you and Fraser kind of suggest." And so we kind of wanted to report on the results of that. Obviously, like everyone that's listening has heard about Fraser's and mine, like, you know, how we've done it, but it's always good to hear like a third party opinion. And so Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks Bradley. Thanks for having me. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, so hear you great.
Awesome. Yep. Well, you know, again, thanks so much. Yeah, to go on that great introduction. I first heard of you guys just doing a Google search, and I think it was the second hit that came up when I was Googling iPad deployment, and I think the Deploy 2014 series was like the second or third result, and that's what ultimately introduced me to you and Fraser.
Awesome. I guess they always say that like Google is your best advertisement sort of thing. It's like backdoor Google juice. So for folks that don't know, like our deployment series, we've done two of them. We did Deploy 14. We did Deploy 16. And these were where we take someone that's like maybe in charge of a deployment or a new deployment or a refresh and really doesn't know that wants to make sure they're covering all their bases, because it's more today than just about buying equipment and even knowing how to deploy it. There's a lot that goes on beforehand and afterwards. Tell us your story, Mark. Like, tell us about, you know, the problem you found and then kind of what were the steps you took to accomplish your goals.
All right. No problem. So in summary, what it is obviously I, like Bradley and Fraser, I'm in the technology space. However, I work for out here in San Diego, California, for a big telecom company as doing a full-time system admin for a Windows system admin. But where it started with the school was my daughter, just like how your kids, Bradley, some of them go to the school that you work at and in service. She started kindergarten, and at the end of the kindergarten year, because I also went to the same Catholic school, you know, at St. Michael Academy in San Diego, it's a kindergarten through eighth grade. And when I was asking her some of the things that, you know, she was doing in like computer class or other classes, I noticed that they were doing a lot of the same things. So when I did some investigation at the end of that kindergarten year, I realized, oh, it wasn't the school that in the resources that I remember when I was going there as a student, you know, like 20 plus years ago. A lot of the technology had kind of fallen by the wayside, you know, kind of been neglected a little bit. And that's what jump-started talking to the principal, having that courage to say, hey, you know, I'd like to volunteer my time. Obviously, this is my area of expertise on some things, not everything. And when she kind of opened up, she said, hey, we have this grant, but it only can be used for iPads or Apple products, but we also need to refresh like the computer lab. So I said, okay, well, let's start on the iPads. That's something doable. So they had a couple thousand, about $15,000-$16,000. But I had been used to mobile device management from the enterprise space, but not necessarily from the education space. So that's where I crammed. Basically, I took your, 14 episodes, mm-hmm. and I crammed it in about four nights, like so after I put the kids to bed and everything like that. So from a Saturday night from like 10 p.m. to 1 in the morning, do that on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. I crammed listening at like probably 2x. I crammed your whole series, took notes on it, and then reported back on like that Wednesday on my lunch break, called the principal, did like a 30-minute meeting, laid out the vision and everything like that. And that's when we're off to the races, you know.
Yeah, and you know, that's probably sounds a lot of the stories that I hear, and I think I'm sure that Fraser hears as well. It's like in a perfect world, we would have these like long refresh planning cycles where if you're going to refresh something in May, you're starting in November. For example, we'll start on our budget for next year school-wise next month.
Right.
Like we just started school. And so we have, we spend 9-10 months preparing a budget for the following year. It's just really kind of crazy how much time goes into a lot of things. But oftentimes what happens with technology is you'll get a grant in February And you've got to start making buying decisions like, you know, days, weeks later. You don't have time necessarily to you know, go travel to other schools or to spend months talking to vendors about strategy. It's like you've got to do something. You've got to do it fast. So that's really one of the reasons we did this series is would be a centralized place to get started. And so as I mentioned, we had the Deploy 2016 series, and all those episodes are at outofschool.net. And if you look on the sidebar, there's a section called Deploy 2016, and every episode is listed there with a link to it. Of course, if you're subscribed to the podcast, it starts at episode 163 and goes on for like 14, 15 weeks. So tell us about, so what did you do in this deployment? Like, what were the devices you picked? And tell us about the infrastructure and really, what were you tasked with?
Okay. Yeah, so on there, basically it was a project. The principal didn't really have too much technical knowledge on there, but knew that, we had to one shot to really get this done well, because she wasn't sure if we, may get a grant, something like this in the near future. So when I looked at how much we had to go with, started reviewing like iPad Airs, listening to, like your guys' stuff, your content. I walked the campus, checked the access points, the current infrastructure, and it kind of scared me at first, because when I saw the speed that they had, they still have a slow 10 megabit down, 2 megabit up. So it's, most people's, LTE smartphones faster than that, right? But hey, that's what they had. It's a shared campus where there's an academy, a church, and a preschool. So, with the resources and, the leadership and everything like that, they're obviously having to balance costs and all that stuff. That's what I had to work with, right? I was kind of like the new guy in there, kind of helping out, so I couldn't just ask for things, right? Unlike at other schools or maybe at my place of employment, they're a different way to ask for more resources. So I got a lay of the land, saw the speed there. The access points were 3 or 4 year old, like access points that were for small and medium business, but there are definitely old Cisco APs that were, out of warranty, out of end of life. So I looked at that, and then I looked at the grant. They never had any type of like new equipment, like probably in over 10 or 15 years, and that's from the lab or even any tablets. So it's kind of a fresh slate. The initial quote that they got from their Apple education rep that dealt directly with the principal at first was they were at the time, it was the Apple iPad Air 2s, only 16 gigs for 20 of them, and then like a Brakeford, charging cart. And then that's pretty much it. And then not even cases. So I looked that over, scratched that right away, and I said, hey, everything that I read, because of the speed and everything, I said, hey, right away, I don't mind bumping down one generation. So we ended up going with 20 iPad Air, just iPad Airs, the generation previous, upped the capacity of 32 gigs because, 16 is just definitely not enough. And then that extra money that we saved by doing that, I spent the extra $1,000 on that, got a mid-level Mac Mini with a 1 terabyte drive, because the long-term goal was, no one was really talking about it, but I knew caching server, because of my experience from the enterprise side, caching server in this type of environment with slow internet connection, but an okay network, would definitely come in handy a lot. And that was the basis of it.
Yeah, caching server is one of those things that I don't think gets talked about enough.
Right.
And it's really important around iOS release times for a couple of reasons. A, there's the iOS download. And then B, there's a lot of apps that get updated around that time. I mean, some of them can be pretty significant in size. Like you think about GarageBand and the iWork apps, these can be 400 to 500 megs in size. And while my school is blessed with like incredibly fast internet, I know we're in the exception. I mean,
yes.
Even a school that's like, if you've got a school with 500, students, but like a 20 meg internet connection, like you can saturate that really fast.
Yes.
And the caching server is in reality a cheap upgrade to a network. If you can't get more bandwidth, you can put in more caching servers. And you can even put, obviously a bigger school with a slower connection can even put in more than one and kind of help alleviate that. So I don't think it's something that gets talked about enough. Especially now while you can cache iCloud documents as well, if users have multiple devices on the network, you can restore faster. Just an incredible feature that you can get I've got about $1,000 Mac Mini that we're using with it. It's got 16 gigs of RAM, the fastest processor you could get at the time. I think it's a 2014 model and a terabyte hard drive, and it's really served us well. And it's really interesting on iOS release days to see the kind of data that it's saving you from having to go out to the internet. And this doesn't even count if you have a metered internet connection. This right. can even be bigger. Like, of course, I know most schools are probably on business plans. But again, I know in a lot of countries, they may be on satellite internet, or maybe have to, you know, literally tether their network to, a cell phone.
Right.
Caching server can be absolutely life changing. If you've got a decent network, you said you've got a decent network, but terrible bandwidth, caching server is a no brainer. But yeah, I think that's a great point about going down in specs, but going up in storage size. And of course, this hopefully won't be as big of an issue going forward, because it looks like 16 gigs has been eliminated from the iPad line. But it's like, I'm always, you know, we're at the place with the maturity of iPad hardware where not having the latest and greatest doesn't, you know, eliminate you unless you have very specific needs. It's not going to hurt you in the short term, and probably not the long term as well, like, you know, only having 16 gigs of storage. And I'm sure at some point 32 will become the new 16. In the next, you know, 5 to 6 years, we'll be thinking, oh gosh, we can handle 32 gigabytes as apps if they get bigger and bigger and bigger. Content gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Then the camera rolls obviously get bigger and bigger and bigger as well. So tell me about the network at the school. What was that like?
Oh man, the network, a lot of other admins probably can relate, you know, with just, we're talking, I mean, some of the switches are like, they're 100 megabit switches that are, you know, 7-8 years old. You know, some of them are, you know, pieced together. They're not all the same make, model, and everything like that, because, you know, being at a church with limited resources, sometimes, you know, they take donations from other businesses, or you know, they pull together fundraisers or whatever, you know, what have you, in the years past, and they do the best they can, right? So I definitely can't fault that. But it's definitely not something, you know, like when I hear you guys on the podcast every week, where, you know, I'd love to have, you know, an Aerohive network and everything like that. You know, that would be like, you know, heavenly, right? That would be awesome. But yeah, as far as the network, I mean, we're talking APs, where the big thing that I pushed was using some of the money where at least we were able to put in about 4 APs scattered throughout the campus, or through at least the school, where we'd have decent coverage, and these would be small and medium business like APs that can handle the higher, you know, capacity. Because the one thing that that the school, like, leadership team was talking about, because they have like a trusted vendor, right, a provider who does like cabling, networking, alarm systems, etc. They kept saying, oh, you know, we would have okay coverage. You know, you're going to have okay coverage. You won't have that many dead spots. And I said, okay, that's great, but nowhere have you guys talked about handling density. And at first, they're like, what are you talking about density? And I said, well, it's one thing to have coverage, but when you saturate 20 or 25, you know, devices in one room accessing one access point, this network can't handle that, right? You know, or these existing access points, you know, can't handle that. And then they started to open up their eyes. They're like, oh, you know, let's take a step back. Like, Mark might be on, you know, the right road of looking at things, you know, in a better way in 360. You know, and you guys echoed that, you know, in the deploy series with, you know, vision. You know, it's like we had a macro level vision of what we're shooting for strategically for these major components or initiatives. But then in parallel, some of those key hot points, I laid out a plan to discuss with the leadership that, hey, we have to go deep into accounting for these things and like behavior and studying things, you know, and talking about things like that with density. Because for a lot of them, obviously, if they don't come from a technical background, that's something to easily overlook. But then it will bite you in the butt after the first year or the second year. And then you're trying to recover. And plus it puts a bad, you know, stain in their mouth of, you know, that the rollout wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that really has changed in the past 7 to 8 years on Wi-Fi is capacity. I mean, obviously, I mean, most everybody listening is going to know that. But you was talking to someone yesterday. We're talking about like network planning for the next 10 years. I'm like, yeah, it's crazy to think about, because you think about like the 10 years we're coming out of. Like, if you built a network in 2006, and you built it like as the best ability built you know how to do at the time with really, you know, almost nearly unlimited resources. I mean, you just had no idea what was you were asking your network to do. I mean, you like laptops were starting to come big. They were kind of cheap Dell. I mean, the it was like Dell desktops and then cheap Dell laptops. But like it was mainly, you know, wireless and conference rooms and things like that. It was like you were building for coverage. It was never like, oh, this is going to – the plan was this will have 3 to 4 devices on at a time. And, you know, fast forward to 10 years later, we have people that have 3 to 4 devices on them.
Right.
Alone. And so that's been the challenge with networking. And that's something that kind of concerns me going forward is you have to look at your network and not knowing that you don't know what it's going to be asked to do over the next 10 years, but you have to build a foundation to where it can evolve as your needs go. And one of the things I've been thinking about is networking as a platform rather than networking as like vendors and products. Like, so it's like, I'm not buying switches from this vendor, you know, from this VAR. You know, like I want someone that can come on and say, okay, look at my entire infrastructure, like wired, wireless. We need to standardize. We need to buy into a platform that can evolve with us as needs change, because they will over the next 10 years. Because, I mean, you think about the lifespan of switches. You know, I say every 5 to 7 years. Well, gosh, that means for a lot of people that turns into 10 really quick.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, when you're doing capital expenditures on networking equipment, it gets put off so easy year to year. And so like 5 to 7 years turns into 7 to 9. Oh, one more year. And then it's all of a sudden you've had these same switches for 11 years. And you just – it's tough. It is tough. So, yeah, it's like networking as a platform is kind of my new thought process, because that's how it's coming. Everything's moving to where it's no longer just about, you know, hardware, but it's about what's the software on the boxes can those do as well. When I say boxes, I mean like your APs and your switches and your firewall. You know, what is that? What is that doing? Because it's like I see the next wave is not going to be necessarily, you know, I think we've kind of probably hit our, not capacity maximum, but like, you know, we're probably not going to, you know, if we think the average user at our school right now has, you know, 1.7 devices, just throwing out a number. Like, that's probably not going to go to 4X like that over the next 10 years. Like, it may go to where, like, the average is 3. And, yeah, you're going to need a little bit more capacity. But it's not like we're – it's not like the capacity is going to be, you know, like it was the last years. Where I see the challenges going forward with networking are being able to handle IoT-type devices. And I don't mean, like, watches. I mean, like – connected buildings, like it's going to be CCTV, it's going to be DVRs, it's HVAC, like everything's coming on the network. Everything will be on the network by default in your building. And those aren't necessarily like capacity challenges, but they're, to me, they're more of integration and security challenges. Like I've been working with a company called Zingbox here recently, and what they do is they do security for IoT devices. So it's I mentioned this on the show, and I'll do a whole show on this soon. But they basically scan your network for like IoT-related activity. And again, when I say IoT, I know most people think of like home automation, but I'm thinking of like things that do things that aren't like they're on the network that aren't networking based. It's not like a computer. Right. It's you know, it's doing something else. And the major vulnerabilities they found in our network were with our HVAC, our CCTV, DVR, and our security system. Like our security system meaning like our building security system. And like all these attempted connections from overseas, for whatever reason, the DVR was phoning overseas like periodically. Like there's no reason for that. I mean, it's like, and so we built Zingbox helped me build all these custom rules in place in our firewall to block all that, like just literally stop it, so it cleaned it up majorly. And so that's my big fear going forward. And that's a new wave of challenge because, you know, what we've had is like, you know, if you were a networking guy 10 years ago, yeah, you were expected to handle like the Dell PC rollout and the network. Well, you know, now you're expected to handle the network plus mobile device deployment. Well, in the next 10 years, you're going to be able to expect to do that plus secure all these devices that you don't have any idea what they're doing on your network. Like, again, the HVAC controller. I mean, I was talking to our maintenance guys. I said, the challenge with these stuff, I understand that we got to get this stuff on the network, and I love the value that it brings to our organization. But you got to understand from my perspective, we're putting something on the network that I don't, from companies that don't make networking products, that I don't really have a clue what it's doing. On the flip side, imagine if I came to you and said, hey, we bought this new switch that can control our HVAC. You would be like, well, I'm not letting that thing anywhere near HVAC. I don't know what it's doing. So you have to look at that from my perspective. But those are the challenges I think that are going to be going forward is that and plus integration with all the things, everything integrated. That's kind of the key challenge for our organization right now is just integration among services, and by integration I mean there is none.
It's like wave one, right? You know, it's like when Netscape was coming online, and you know, we have those same things, and in many cases, because we on our campus we've had some suggestions of, you know, hey, can we, you know, automate, throw in a Nest or a thermostat, and you know, centrally manage them, and some of those things, when I look at it again, right, you know, what you guys talk a lot about, and I agree with 100% is looking at things in proper context, right? And so it's one thing to worry about those challenges from, you brought, you know, from both perspectives, right? From your side as the technical specialist there and knowing that technology, and then from the other side, the, you know, whether it be the HVAC or the building security or what have you. But even looking at that, and then that other aspect of, well, does the current staffing or the forecasting of the people who would be managing or overseeing this or implementing it or be having accountability for it, do they have the capability and capacity to, you know, to handle that as well? You know, so there's still that people aspect, right? As much as we're trying to automate things, there's still those people who are pulling the strings, pushing the buttons, making the decisions of, well, are they properly equipped? Are they properly trained and educated to say, hey, let's not put that in right now, or if we do need to put it in, here's some of these key stipulations that are like non-negotiable.
Yeah, and that's a challenge too for like, you know, heads of school is, you know, when you're planning these things out, you're trying to assemble a team to do tasks that aren't even ready yet, and there's certainly very little training on that. I mean, certainly at the collegiate level, you know, a lot of this stuff is, and that's why I'm always big on hire the right people and then teach them how to do the job. Because things are going to evolve so stinking quickly. I mean, what I was hired to do at our school 7 years ago is roughly like a third of my job now. It just has evolved into so many different things. And so like you hire the people that can do good work, and you let the jobs evolve. So from an app deployment perspective, what route did you go? Did you deploy through Apple Configurator? Did you go with an MDM? What was your route there?
On the MDM side, that was a mini project in itself, like trying to learn everything. And the timing was right because I think that's when they were starting to initially roll out iOS 9 and the whole idea of, you know, what is that, managed distribution, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. As opposed to with licensing for the apps and everything. Everything was new in that sense. And for me, I have a big background in Microsoft SCCM. So for those who aren't familiar with it, that's might one of many management products that enterprises or businesses use to maintain a certain configuration, right, for a laptop or a computer or devices. And when I looked at it, I said, oh, well, you know, Apple's model, you know, has always been, you know, by Apple ID, more user-centric. And it's ironic because the newer versions of SCCM on my day job were moving towards being more user-based. But as I see with Apple, they were moving towards or giving the option of more device-based, you know, app distribution and everything. So I ended up going with using, because cost was an issue, I had to use the free version of Meraki because we were under 100 devices. That was the MDM of choice that gave enough, you know, flexibility for there. One of the other big things, some people said, oh, you know, can't we go to other vendors to buy these iPads? I said, no, we have to get them straight from Apple or from authorized reseller, because from the get-go, I knew long-term, you know, I wanted them in depth, you know, I wanted them to be in depth, so that way, worst-case scenario, if they get stolen or lost, you know, that profile, we can always push it down through the air. So even if someone, like, wiped it, you know, I described that scenario to the, you know, to the principal. I says, even if someone, you know, did a hard erase and wipe it, the moment it hits the internet, you try to connect it, it's going to say, you know, it's going to push down the profile, you know, that's associated with our organization. And she thought that was, you know, pretty good, pretty impressive. So we went with the MDM that route. We're using Meraki, push down all the apps. I do device-based assignment because we have a small 20-pad cart. So I have to account for the lower grades, the mid grades, and the higher, you know, the junior, you know, junior high grade apps. We have two iPads that were part of that that order that did go to two pilot teachers, our kindergarten and first grade teacher, and then our sixth grade teacher. So I wanted to spread it out. And this touched on – this hit so well home. I think it was on – it dealt with on the deploy series. It hit so well home on – I think it was on part one with vision leadership, but then the other thing was working with the staff, right? You know, it's like, you know, you have the early adopters, the people who are in the middle, and then the people who are hesitant to change. And I drew on the series really well because – yeah, I looked at the technical setup and all of the specs, and I said, okay, we can make that work. But the super huge component in this whole technology refresh was the psychology of working with the people, you know, working with the staff. And when that was brought up to me with the principal, they said, hey, we'll have some resources to have one or two teachers get an iPad along with the student iPad cart. I said, all right, well, we need to pick a teacher who's afraid of technology, or you know, who doesn't use it as much, but who has the you know, the ability to be open to learning. And then I need someone who's kind of like, who wants to always go gung-ho, right? And I wanted the yin and the yang on there, and that's what we got. And working with these two teachers, like testing, you know, those iPads, because I'm able to use obviously different profiles to push certain apps, so that when they log in, I know that that's a teacher iPad. By I changed wallpaper. There's certain apps that only teachers get, et cetera. And I've been pilot testing Apple Classroom already, and that's been huge. But working with the people is actually just as important as the technology that we picked, right? And that's the huge thing to answer that question.
Yeah, I mean, you can throw money at so many problems with this, but ultimately, if you don't have the people involved to take advantage of it, then it's really worthless. And that's because right. goes back to people. I mean, you've got to put the effort in getting people on board, getting people trained, getting them excited, and giving them the tools to be successful. I mean, again, there's only so many problems you can throw money at. Before we move on, let's thank our sponsor for the night. It's the great folks at Jamf Software. You guys know Jamf. They make the great mobile device management platform for iPads, iPhones, Apple TVs, Macs, of course. If you're looking at deploying an Apple-centered deployment at your school or your business, we highly recommend Jamf Software. I'm a customer of theirs, and so is Fraser. Really, really good stuff. One of the things I've been loving doing this year is, you know, thanks to a great phone-optimized version of my JSS login. You know, I've been in classrooms, and teachers like, hey, I need this iPad on these apps on these iPads. And I can immediately just rescope it into that app to those, that class set of iPads. And it's been really, really handy and downloads super fast. So check them out, jampsoftware.com, JAMFsoftware.com, and let them know you heard about them from our show. And thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show this week. And so in retrospect, did you make any mistakes that you think?
The
overall deployment.
Overall, just the whole experience?
Yeah, the whole experience. If you had anything to go back and do over again, would you change anything?
The one thing, knowing what I know now, is it would be I would have put even more time into the methods and of my communications to the staff and to the parents and to the students. I was really working a lot with the staff, you know, leading up to the deployment, but I don't think I did a good enough job of framing, I guess, giving, you know, better bite-sized bits of data in maybe more colorful or, you know, different avenues, you know, versus your standard email, you know, Google Doc, you know, write up with a couple of screenshots and that's it. Knowing what I know now, or what I learned through the process of last year moving into the second year, it's totally different. You know, like now, depending, like sometimes I'll make a, like what you've done, I'll do a screencast with voiceover a couple times to do some updates just to mix it up. I'll do a YouTube video and post it on the, you know, the link to our Google Apps for Education account. So, and I'll share that with the teachers. I've adjusted some of my writing where, you know, like now that I know the teachers more, I depending on what's most important to them, knowing them better, I'll adjust, you know, shortening or using certain vocabulary words. A lot more of my emails and documentation, I'm adding like in the subject line, like little things like that. Like, oh, I think it's like a 2-minute read, 3-minute read. So I realize even more now of the communication in different forms, getting being better at that from the get-go, really could have made the deployment even better, right? And that's, to me, that's the biggest thing, is that my methods of communication off the get-go could have been a lot better.
Yeah, and that's something that's hard to get right on the first time, and a lot of that takes getting to know the people. I mean, I have a whole lot more credibility with our staff like 7 years later than I do in, you know, a year later. And a lot of it's just, I mean, here's a perfect example. Had a teacher text me last night, said, hey, his parents having trouble getting logged into Spelling City. It's our spelling, which we have like our spelling lister in there, and all that's pretty cool system. And of course, it's a whole other system we have to build each year, so that's a lot of fun. And and so I said, hey, I built the CSV file to upload, so I went and found like what their password was originally, and so I logged in fine. Said, hey, it's working fine for me. I said, but feel free, you know. And so I left it at that. I said, yeah, I logged in at this website right here, and you know, this is credentials I use. And so I saw her this morning. I said, hey. They get logged in, and she said, well, I don't know. I haven't heard back from them. She said, I've been meeting with them this afternoon about something else. So I'll ask. I said, well, pass along my cell number and have them text me tonight if they get stuck. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that to brag on myself, but I say that to say, like, that's a good way to handle people. Like, you know, this teacher works all day teaching these kids. She's exhausted by the end of the day. Not that I'm not tired, but it's different. Right. And I basically took her out of that and said, look, if they're having problems tonight, just give them my, you know, have them contact me directly so you're out of it. And that's a way I built credibility with that teacher, is just like, let me handle that for you, kind of situation. And let me absolve you from having to deal with that, and let you focus on things that you do best. And let me focus on you not being the middleman between this parent getting logged into this service. And it's just being, like, just being friendly with people, being appreciative of them, and being perceptive of ways you can make their lives easier in ways that doesn't like make dramatically slow me down. I mean, obviously, right. it would be faster for me to unlock everybody's door every morning, but that's inefficient. But like things like that, I can do. You know, it's easy for me to work on, so she doesn't have to be the middleman. So yeah, I mean, that's a pretty cool story. I mean, it's neat hearing from someone that's like taking these principles and like actually applied them, because they are. I mean, really, whether you're doing a Chromebook deployment, a Surface deployment, an iPad deployment, a Mac deployment, the fundamental principles remain the same in terms of how you integrate this stuff into your school and then ultimately into your classroom. And certainly on the networking side, that's always the same. These devices are always going to be using more and more. Interestingly, on the Wi-Fi side, that we seem to be settled on like one stream and two stream devices. Like, we don't seem to be hitting like the four stream devices, even in laptops. Seems like laptops are even going down to mostly two stream devices, and we've yet to really see wave two in mobile devices at all. And you know, especially, you know, I'm assuming that the next iPad won't have it, just because the Macs don't even have it yet. And I would like to think that the next round of Mac updates, which are due any time, would finally see Wave 2, and then you'll likely see Wave 2 coming to handheld devices over the next 24 months.
No, that's true. I mean, I'm looking at it. I mean, and I get to see some things, you know, early on. For example, like, I know some of these early on HP Chromebooks, just from because of the things I get to do at work, you know, experimenting with new products and demoing things. So, you know, some of these Chromebooks, because I think you guys have Chromebooks at your school too, right?
Yes, we do.
And when I saw some of them, and I was like, man, I was like, things have come a long way from, you know, wave one. But it's just like anything, right? You'll hit those pockets of waves where they'll jump, and then it kind of lulls out because things are, you know, pivoting, you know, from the vendors or whatever the trend is or what have you. But you know, that's their job, you know. And what's funny is, it's not for me. It's not even my primary job. It's just something. It's just one of those things, I think, for any of the listeners, where I did this main thing was it kind of was a selfish thing too, because I've been in IT for about 10 years, and it was one of those things where I said, hey, do I still like doing this stuff day in, day out? And I said, well, I guess the timing was right, where I was like, let me go find a project where I can do the stuff that I really like doing and not worry about getting paid for it. and see how well and how hard I could work on it. And that I found this, and it's been really awesome because, you know, the school's great, the people are great, they've been very welcoming. But you can see the attitude and the culture. You guys talk about that a lot in the you know, in the Deploy series and throughout the podcast a lot too, is the culture of what you're bringing to the table, you know, in customer service. And how you, I listen to your school a lot with how you guys are like a family. Mm-hmm. You guys always talk about that family feel, and it's amazing where when technology is not an eyesore anymore and something that's that weird elephant in the room, and it's something that either is not talked about or there's more other important things of either increasing enrollment or making the student life experience or student experience on campus better. That's also one of those indirect compliments that as technology, you know, advocates like ourselves, you know, that puts the extra feather in your cap that makes you feel good. Right.
Oh yeah. Well, it's nice to me. One of the most rewarding things is when you hear stories of like how technology really enabled something, not for like technology's sake, but to like enable something that wasn't possible before. And it wasn't about having like cool stuff or like, hey, that's cool. It's like, you know, this allowed that to work and we couldn't have done that before. Like, I love hearing stories like that. And it could be like super, super small stuff. I mean, it could be stuff like, you know, it was hot in the room and our facilities folks were able to turn on an air conditioner on a remote part of the building from their iPad while camping. Like that's awesome. Right. Like, that is like just fantastic. Like, I'm glad I was able to help with that.
It's so fulfilling.
It is.
A big thing that I've been trying to get or learn or get used to is like I listen to, or sometimes I'll use Anchor. You know, it's that everyone talks about it as like the audio version of Twitter. But one of the hashtags I've been trying to use more, because there's always an EdTech hashtag in almost any social media, is I've been trying to find more people who are EdTech volunteers. And it's one of those things where, you know, there are people like me, because I'm sure there's tons of people like me where they want to contribute part-time, you know, they have some technical expertise, but they're not really sure how, or if they want to have that courage to, you know, help out and be a part of something bigger than themselves. And that's one of those big things where, you know, I appreciate you letting me, you know, come on the show and, you know, talk, share the story and stuff, because it's good to hear stories like that, because then you can really hear the essence of, you know, like what the craft, right? The craft of what we like doing.
Right. Yeah. You're right. It is a craft, awesome. and it's an industry, and it's more than just being like the tech guy. It's more about just being there and helping people. Thanks for taking the time to reach out, and thanks for taking the time to come on the show. If folks want to connect with you online, where can they find you?
Like I found you on, I'm starting to use Twitter a lot. My handle's Ask Mark T. So it's, you know, Ask like A-S-K and then M-A-R-C and then T, like Tango.
Yeah.
So Ask Mark T for on Twitter. And that's usually the easiest way to find me.
We'll link to that in the show notes. So if there are any other listeners that are working at a school on a volunteer basis, I'm sure Mark would love to connect with you. So Fraser will be back next week. If you want to connect with me, I'm Bradley Chambers on Twitter, and my blog is at chambersdaily.com. You can find all of our show notes at outofschool.net. You can subscribe to the show. If you've listened on the website, you can subscribe on iTunes or Overcast or Pocket Cast or any of the other podcasting apps that you use. And so thanks for taking the time to listen to our show this week, and I hope you have a great rest of the week.